Born in Boston, raised in North Carolina, Livingston Taylor is the fourth child in the very musical family that includes Alex, James, Kate, and Hugh Taylor. From top 40 hits, I'll Be in Love with You and I'll Come Running, to I Can Dream of You and Boatman, both recorded by his brother James, Taylor's creative output has continued unabated, creating well-crafted, introspective, and original songs that have earned him listeners worldwide. His musical knowledge has inspired a varied repertoire that he is equally at home with a range of musical genres, folk, pop, gospel, jazz, and from upbeat storytelling to touching ballads. He will be performing Friday night at the College of St. Rose in Albany on, Friday night at the Massery Center, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Livingston Taylor to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, Joe, thank you for that lovely introduction. You are spilling it out this morning. That's good.
Well, we want you to be comfortable.
I'm mildly embarrassed by such accolades. That notwithstanding, that was lovely. Thank you, Joe.
You know, it's always funny when I think of when I just hear the touch of your Southern accent, that we're reminded that you were raised in North Carolina, but because
yes.
We think of you and of course, James and Kate, who are such wonderful friends of the station, are dyed-in-the-world New Englanders, that you have that duality, don't you?
Well, I think that we do have that duality. Certainly, we were born in Boston. We were raised in North Carolina. My father comes from Morganton, North Carolina, up in the mountains. And my mother comes from Newburyport, Massachusetts. So she's very much Yankee in her core. And yes, we do have that duality. And I'm personally delighted to have a foot in both places.
Does it have an impact, do you think, on the music that you write and the way that you perform, in the sense of that there is that, you have two very different perspectives?
Joe, I imagine that it does. But I think it's also important to remember that we came out of an infrastructure where we were in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and North Carolina is a place where, not only North Carolina, but the South in general, the fact is that it was possible in the South to express to have a career choice that involves the creative arts. I think it was a more credible career choice in North Carolina than it would have been had we come from New York or Connecticut or Massachusetts, had we been raised in these places. The fact is that there's something in the water of North Carolina that's very encouraging to being a painter or a potter or a playwright or a dancer. It just seems to be in the territory.
Well, also very much like the Irish tradition of being a very much a storytelling tradition.
Yes, there is that, and my brother James and my sister Kate, less known, our little brother Hugh, we all love to tell stories and really see ourselves as storytellers.
When songwriting, when writing a song and working on that, that's the goal, right? Is to tell some story.
Well, interesting, as I say to my students all the time, you're always telling a story. The question is, what do you want that story to be? You can't walk down the street without telling a story. You're a human being interacting with other human beings. From 100 yards away, people are getting pieces of a story from you. The question is, what's that story going to be? Is it a story that will be sustainable, that will allow you to be comfortable in a changing lifetime? Interesting questions.
So what type of story do you like telling? I mean, what I guess rises to the level of sustainability for you of knowing that this is something that, I mean, isn't an anecdote that you can share with your friends or your students, but something that will resonate with us as an audience?
Always the story should remind people of their humanness and their ability to always refind hope. So perhaps the story is a story that says that I hope I don't go and do what that country song just did to that fella. Stories of contrition, stories of heroism, of adventure. I love writing them all.
Do you think it's essential for the audience to know what you're saying, in the sense of to understand its origin and know where it's coming from and what it should mean?
No, I don't think that it is. I don't think all the time people will ask me what a song means, and I learned long ago, Joe, to wait till they tell me what the song means to them, and then I turn the question back on and say, what do you think it means? And when they tell me, I'm often affirmative about what they've said. And the reason why is I discovered long ago when I tell somebody what the song meant to me, it's never as good as their fantasy of what the song meant to me. So I just don't do it unless hard pushed.
But for the most part, they also, the reason that they resonate for us as an audience is that they're very human emotions that so many of us feel. There is a universal appeal to them, which, you know, also gives it a wide swath, if you will, of how to interpret it, I would assume.
Well, in successful artistic endeavor in general, certainly in successful comedy, what seems to be best is the familiar in an unexpected place.
When you are, you're a faculty member of the Berklee College of Music. You are going.
I am a professor at the Berklee College of Music. I also work in the administration there as well.
How did that come about? And was that always? Was that something that surprised you of being able to teach your craft and to get enjoyment from that?
Well, it came about because 24 years ago, a fellow by the name of Rob Rose, I came and lectured a couple of times at Berklee, and he said, would you teach a class on stage performance? And I was on that like a tick on a dog, and the Berklee College of Music is a remarkably vibrant place. It's really, it's just got a hugely diverse student body, and the thing they have in common is that they are all impassioned and wound up, and dang, it's fun to be there. And so my sense, the other thing is that I was born to be a teacher. I love to teach. I love to discover how things work and why they work and why somebody is good on stage and why they're crummy on stage and what are those pieces that make it come together. So when offered a chance to write and teach a course, I was enthusiastic about that, and here we are 24-odd years later.
What does it take? I mean, there are people who are very talented, who have wonderful music, who have great talent, but to use your term, could be crummy on stage. Do you understand why that is?
With all due respect, yes, I do understand why that is. And the what an audience wants, above all else, is they want to believe that they are of value to you, that they are seen. What music allows, what words, melody, and chords and rhythm, words, melody, chord, rhythm, what they allow is an audience and an artist to be safely next, close to one another. And once you put in the melody, which is familiar, notes are familiar, chords are familiar, that's not to say they can't show up in an unexpected place and be interesting, but they are basically familiar, those eight notes. And once you put it, once you put notes and rhythm, and those things are very familiar, then you can start exchanging intimacies that if you tried to do it without music, they would throw you in jail.
Mm.
And this is what, so the awareness that, and for me, audiences are comfortable around me because when I look at them, the thing that I know is that every time I see my audience, I am re-reminded that I need them a great deal more than they need me. And when I see them, my vision for my life was my big idea. An audience didn't say to me when I was seven, oh, Livingston, please pick up a guitar and start playing for us. this was my vision for myself. So any audience at all, any single audience member, whether they like me or not, it doesn't matter to me because I like them. It was me who needed them. And as I'm fond of saying, they don't need to love me. I love them enough for the both of us.
I think it's worth noting, and I find this interesting, because you started off very early in your career working, you opened for Linda Ronstadt, who, I mean, notoriously hated being on stage and would often, and has said on this show twice, I believe, of how it was so difficult for her to go out, and she would try to find ways of hiding behind things because it was so, so difficult. Was that a learning experience for you?
Certainly. I remember being in Japan with Linda, and Linda looked across. She was having her hair done, and she looked across at me, and she said, "So you just go out there and play? Just walk out and play?" I said, "Oh yeah," and she said, "Wow, I would love to be able to do that."
Mm.
And the fact is that, yes, I'm a storyteller, and I'm a musician, and I'm a craftsperson, and I love Linda to have her career, because she wasn't comfortable with an audience, has needed to carry a great deal of things with her in terms of side musicians and stage props and that sort of stuff, and it's a large burden to carry.
And to have that type of career, that's where, because obviously you have the talent. There's this incredible talent, but there is I love that you use the word craftsperson. I mean, being able to because there is a building, isn't there? I mean, there is a very hands-on crafts approach to what it is that you do.
The chords need to be right. The strings need to not buzz. The guitar needs to be in tune. The words need to be articulately written and then articulately delivered. Yes, there is a massive infrastructure that needs to be done right. And none of it guarantees success, because the world does not belong to the talented and to the deserving, but it belongs to the tenacious and the fortunate. And And so, so none of taking care of details doesn't ensure success. But and you can be sloppy as can be and win the lottery. But the fact is that you improve your chances by being mindful of detail.
You'll be performing Friday night at the College of St. Rose at the Masary Center, February 22nd at 7:30, and you'll be working with the students, which is very, very cool.
Oh, God, I am so looking forward to this! Yes!
That's a very high voice. So how do you, what message do you like to, when you meet with groups of students, what message do you like to get across?
Oh, God, I got no message for my students. The notion that somehow I am wise and I will spread my wisdom amongst them. Are you kidding me? Listen, let's be very clear here, Joe. I need them.
Well,
I need their energy and their hope and their youth. They don't need me.
Well, they want to have a career. Many of them want to have a career that you had. And
yes,
let's face it, there are people.
If they won't have the career that I have, they will have a career that will be wonderful, but it will be of their own invention. What they're interested in doing with me is simply trying on different ideas while I watch. That's what young people love. They don't need to be taught. They need to be observed and seen. They don't need to be, certainly, they don't need to be lectured to. They need to be watched. Their powers of observation are so acute that when they do something that I don't like or I don't really agree with, they will sense my reservation about the direction they're taking. And they can adjust that in a nanosecond. God, these kids are bright and perceptive. And what they get to do is they get to invent the world the way they need it to be. Now, you know, when I was your age, I used to, you know, stop it. Stop it. When I was your age, there were half as many people on the planet as there are now. There were no cell phones, and nobody had invented TiVo, so I could stop the action and deal responsibly with my spouse or children. So, the world changes. So, I get to be in their presence. I get to be enthusiastic about their journey. And if I don't like where their journey is going, what I get to do is I get to ask them. I get to say, hey, do you think, I'm not following this one, but I assume that the fault, if I'm not getting it, if I don't like it, I'm assuming that the problem is with me, not with them. Mm. And so what I say is, listen, I don't like the way this song sounds. What's wrong with me? What am I not hearing? Fill me in. Educate me. Teach me. And So no, I'm around my students not to give information, but to get information.
Well, it's a wonderful opportunity that they have, and they're great students, obviously. It's Livingston Taylor in concert with the St. Rose Orchestra Friday, February 22nd at 7:30 at the Masary Center for the Arts in Albany. StRose.edu, that's STROSE, StRose.edu for more information. Livingston Taylor, a great pleasure. We'll enjoy having you in town. Thank you very much.
Joe, thank you so much for your time, and great to speak with everybody at WAMC. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.